The RPG After Years is part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Network. Find out more at probablywork.com.
Welcome to the RPG After Years, your weekly show covering all things RPGs from the past, present, and future. I'm Scott.
And I'm Rich.
And this is episode 58. No Jay today, as he is lame and doesn't like superhero stuff.
Lame.
Amongst other many reasons he has to not be here, but we won't get into that right now. Anyway, superhero stuff, you say? That's right. Today, we are swinging back into action with our review of the DLC for Marvel's Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4. It's The City That Never Sleeps. Yep, it's another review episode, and like I said, we're looking at the DLC for Marvel's Spider-Man, and we have actually already done a full review on the actual base game. That was back in episodes 48 and 49. Mm-hmm. That was me and Rich, again, there by ourselves, I think. Since we've already covered that game, we're not going to be talking about the development history and the gameplay so much in depth on that game itself. You can go back to those episodes and listen to that. We will be touching on a little bit of that today, but mostly as it pertains to the differences between that game and the DLC itself. So it's a review. So no catch up and no tea time and none of those shenanigans. But we do have a couple of quick announcements before we really get into it. First off, the RPG Club, if you are participating in that. For those that don't know, it's like a book club for RPGs. We and the rest of the community play along the game with a certain game that we are chosen by ourselves and the patrons together. We play through the same little chunks all together and then wait for everybody to catch up. It's like a book club. But anyway, the deadline for the last section was today. And so the next one is to complete Chapter 14 by April 11th. In World of Final Fantasy, and we will be convening the RPG Club after the review today to talk about this past section, so just keep that in mind. Also, another big announcement, the Final Fantasy VII Materia Lockdown has officially kicked off. I know a lot of people are excited about this. For those who haven't been following the show for a super long time, this is an annual charity challenge event that we have come up with. Created by our very own UK host, Bill. And basically what it is you play through the OG Final Fantasy VII, although I think some people are trying it the rules with a remake this time, like Frost. Mm-hmm. But there's this Twitter bot, at FF7MLD, created by Jay, who basically you tweet at it, and it tells you what kinds of materia each character is allowed to use. So, like, for example, your Cloud may only be able to use red and blue materia, and that's it. It makes the game more interesting, and it's for a good cause. All benefits or proceeds raised go towards the Motor Neuron Disease Association, which unfortunately, the Motor Neuron Disease claimed Bill's mother's life probably like 4 years ago now, I guess.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, which is very sad, but it's a cause close to his heart. And I know that he's streaming on the RPG After Years Twitch channel his run through. He's got a mod going to where like every character is replaced by Barrett, which is really funny. And he's doing like some donation rules for like if you give $20, you can have him sell his materia. So I think some people are going to make him sell enemy skill, which makes the game a lot harder.
Yes.
I'm also going to be streaming my Materia Lockdown run on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/thescottspot with underscores between the words. And that will be the side quests at the end of the game, because I have already beat the game on my first file, and I really want to go back and do those side quests. If you're interested, again, follow FF7MLD, and you can go to materialockdown.com to find out more, which is a website created by yours truly, all by myself. Jay might have helped a little bit. I don't remember. you said you're going to do the lockdown this time too, right, Rich?
Yes, I need to fire it up and start that again and see what I can do.
It should be fun. I'm excited. But yeah, everybody get into that. But that's it for the announcements.
All right. So with that done, let's swing back into action with this amazing game. Yeah. See what I did there, Scott? Swinging into action.
You're so clever.
I am.
Okay, so today we are talking about Marvel's Spider-Man, The City That Never Sleeps, which is the DLC. Basically, it's a DLC of three different episodes. By the time I played it, they were all already out. Mm-hmm. Looking at the release dates, they came out within a few months of each other. Like, part one came out on October 23rd, 2018. Part two was on November 20th, and part three was December 21st, which I wonder if it was like that easy to develop them, or if they just really wanted to stagger the releases or what.
They probably had it all done. They just decided like, we're just going to do this in chapters. Like everybody can buy, you can buy it individually when they come out, or you can do all at once, like a season pass kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just like how Resident Evil Revelations 2 came out. Yeah. That was the same way, kind of introducing it episodically. So I think that's what they did.
There was a phase there in gaming for a while where like doing things episodically was pretty common. I think that trend might be starting to go away for better or for worse, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, like it.
So on this show, we always go, we go over the number one music and movies at the time of release. And so in the US, the Billboard number one was Girls Like You by Maroon 5 featuring Cardi B. Now it's all good, babe. Well, that backward, babe. Let me go. Yeah, cause girls like you go around with guys like me till sundown. When I come through, I need a girl like you. Rich, am I crazy, or have you and I done a review before with this song?
Yeah, we have. I can't remember what it was, but we did.
It was either me and you, or it was like me and Corey. I know I've had all these songs we're about to talk about on the show before.
No, I think it was me and you. I think it was Spider-Man.
It might have been. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know how long after the base game it came out, but do you like the song or what?
I like Maroon 5 occasionally. I don't like Cardi B.
Let me see if I can find her on here. So who you gonna call? There we go. I'm so happy I managed to just click right to her. Based on these waveforms I'm looking at. Like you, I am a Maroon 5 sometimes fan. It's like their songs are very hit or miss for me. Some of them I love, some of them I don't like at all. This is one I could take away.
Oh yeah. That's Cardi B just scares me. Oh, yeah. Nice. Cardi B just scares me. Like, she's that one person that, you know, if you run across her, she might stab you. Just by that crazy.
Did you see that talented crazy, awards performance she did not that long ago with the scissoring on stage?
I don't think that should be on television.
I think it was.
Or at least not the cable access television, you know, like behind Skinamax. That should be fine.
The Soccer Mom Brigade came out for that, but
oh yeah,
they were scandalized.
Oh, I get that. Okay, that's fine. I could be a little scandalous about that. You know, that's all right.
To be fair, I think it was a performance of WAP. So,
even better.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that. So in the UK, when the first episode came out, it was Promises by Sam Smith featuring, excuse me, Calvin Harris featuring Sam Smith. I can't do golden rings, but I'll give you everything. Magic is in the air, there ain't no science here. Have you heard this song, Rich?
I have. Not a fan.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Like, sometimes I'm like, it's a little bit of a funky beat, but I don't know. I guess I just don't really like the vocals that much.
I feel like I should be in, like, a dark jazz club, sitting in the back, sipping on some bourbon.
I wish I had some bourbon right now. It's only 10 a.m. So, when episodes 2 and 3 of the DLC came out, the number one song was the same in the US and UK. So I guess this song must have lasted for a couple months. It's Thank You Next by Ariana Grande. Look what I got. Look what you taught me. Yeah, for that I say thank you. Next, thank you. Next, thank you. Next, I'm so fucking grateful for my. I'm gonna guess that you're not an Ariana fan.
She confuses me.
Oh. Why do you say that, Rich?
She just does. It's just like, I saw her whenever she's in the Nickelodeon show where she just played this airhead doofy girl. But now she's like this big mega pop star.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what happened?
Corey.
Like she's, oh yeah.
I think after, she's definitely probably in his like top 5 divas. So I know Lady Gaga's number 1, but.
Yeah, all of those, like, I think it's a rule that her, Lady Gaga, and Mariah Carey can't be in the same room together.
It must be.
The divas would probably explode. But no, I mean, they're talented. She's talented. She's really good at what she does and everything. I just, not a big fan of her music.
She is super talented. You're right. Like, she's got some pipes on her.
Oh, yeah.
And you know,
I just can't.
Go ahead.
What's that? I just can't get past the see, we keep doing that.
Yeah.
I can't get past the thing what she did in Nickelodeon where they made her out to be this stupid airhead, you know, kid. But now I just look past like I saw you as that goofy person.
No, I totally get where you're coming from, because to me, she still looks like she's about 12 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, her and Lady Gaga did that like mega hit song recently, Rain on Me or whatever.
Yeah, two of the three can be in the same room together without causing catastrophic problems.
Gotcha.
Just that third one gets in there and Mariah Carey, she'll absorb them.
Right. Okay, well, so that's a decent song. Let's move on to the movies. So when episode 1 came out in the U.S., the number one hit was Halloween, directed by David Gordon Green, starring Jamie Lee Curtis. Is this a remake or like a...
It is. No... It's not a remake. It's a continuation of that whole franchise and everything. As you can tell about, you know, the U.S. is number one. This was during October whenever that that chapter came out. So naturally, you know, as Americans here, like our murder and horror during October.
Yeah.
As whereas U.K., which Scott, what was the U.K. one?
It was A Star is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, which also starred himself and Lady Gaga.
Yeah. So in the UK, they're more in touch with their feelings. In America, we're more about stabby stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that I haven't seen A Star is Born because Corey is such a huge Lady Gaga fan. You would have thought he would have forced me to see that.
Yeah.
But
I just heard the song that her and Bradley Cooper did so much on the radio. Like they're like at work, they would always play that. I can't do it anymore.
I wonder if there was any Activia in this Halloween continuation. Well, in the first Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis was like a young teenage star, right?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, instantly enough, Paul Rudd was in one of these movies.
I bet he still looks the same.
Yes, he does.
Or younger.
Just looks a little bit older.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it just continues the story and everything about that, I believe. Gotcha. I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch it, actually.
Okay. I wouldn't mind saying that either. I'm a horror fan, as most people know. So when episode 2 came out in the U.S., the number one film was Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, directed by David Yates, starring Eddie Redmayne, Johnny Depp, and Jude Law, amongst several other well-known names. I know Zoe Kravitz is in there, and I think a couple other big names. But I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and the movie was okay.
I've seen it.
It was a little bit of a disappointment for me. But yeah, hopefully the next one will be better whenever I'm turned 40 and that finally comes out. It's been delayed like 6 times or some shit.
It's because of Johnny Depp's problems, I think.
That's part of it, probably. You know, they finally actually fired him, right?
Or yes, I knew they did that. I remember they got rid of him.
That was the same thing happened in the UK. And I could talk about this. Fantastic Beasts 2 was also the number one in the UK, is what I'm trying to say.
They didn't kick the UK out.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Johnny Depp, when episode 3 came out in the UK, the number one movie was Aquaman, directed by James Wan, starring sexy Jason Momoa and Amber Heard and Willem Dafoe. And the reason I say that is just because, as everyone knows, Amber Heard is where all the controversy around Johnny Depp stems from.
She beat his ass.
Yeah. Cut his finger off. And various other things.
Let's be real. They were doing some weird stuff in the bedroom, and she took it too far. He got offended, and this is where it all happened.
I don't think we'll ever know the entire truth of what exactly happened. But
No. I just think it's hilarious.
And then something super relevant when episode 3 came out. In the U.S., the number one was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, directed by several people, Bob Persichetti, Peter Ramsey, and Rodney Rothman, starring Shameik Moore as Miles Morales.
He's not the same Miles Morales in the game, is he?
No, it's like a different continuation. Okay. Or different Spider-Man.
I do love how the Spider-Verse has a little bit of the storyline in the Miles Morales game.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is an incredible movie, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good. Maybe the best superhero movie. There's Logan, too. I guess my favorite MCU movie is probably Winter Soldier. And I think I would say that Into the Spider-Verse is better than that. So, yeah. So that's what was going on in the world at the time of release. I know that was a lot, but it was very interesting, I thought. So let's dive into the actual development history here. I'll kick us off. So Marvel Spider-Man, The City That Never Sleeps, is a collection of downloadable content developed by Insomniac Games and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment for the 28 video game Marvel Spider-Man. Based on the Marvel comic superhero Spider-Man, I'm assuming everybody that's listening to this knows who Spider-Man is.
If you don't, you need to leave.
Yeah. It was inspired by the long-running comic book mythology and adaptations in other media. It was released in 3 distinct chapters. The Heist, which focused on Black Cat. Turf Wars, which focused on Silver Sable, I believe. This one was about Hammerhead, mostly.
Yes.
And then the third one, Silver Lining, is about Silver Sable, who was a character featured in the base story as well. The DLC sort of serves as an epilogue to the main game, and it takes place 3 months after the end of the base story. It follows Spider-Man as he contends with a new crime wave led by the physically enhanced mob boss Hammerhead, receiving help from several allies, including Master Thief and ex-girlfriend Black Cat, police captain Yuri Watanabe, mercenary Silver Sable, and reporter and girlfriend Mary Jane Watson. During this time, he also deals with the personal problems of his civilian persona, Peter Parker, that sounds familiar, and begins mentoring novice superhero Miles Morales, who had been bitten by a similarly genetically modified spider towards the end of the main game. A lot happens in this DLC, and a lot of it's very interesting. I'm looking forward to getting into it here with you here in a minute.
Yeah, it does a really great job bridging from the main game, from the first game to the second game too. So it does a really good job with that. So The City That Never Sleeps was released monthly for the PlayStation 4 from October to December 2018. Received generally positive reviews from critics. A remastered version of the DLC along with the base game is included with the Ultimate Edition of Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales on the PlayStation 5, which was released in November 2020 and later available on a standalone release. The DLC features a dedication to Spider-Man's co-creator, Stan Lee, who died shortly before the release of the second chapter. I'm trying to remember what that tribute was that they did for him. Or no, it was just a dedication. Sorry. The tribute was in the new one.
It's been a minute since I've played this now, and you've played it much more recently. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's actually the dedication they did to him. And the tribute is in Miles Morales.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I remember the statue in Miles Morales.
Yep.
The City That Never Sleeps received generally positive reviews from critics and journalists. Critics called The Heist the first piece of the three-part DLC saga a, quote, fantastic continuation of the core game, praising its character work and story missions. However, critics noted that its gameplay, particularly the side objectives, felt, quote, fun but repetitive, describing the DLC as, quote, more of the same, but enjoying the story nonetheless despite its short length. And I did go on to Metacritic to see what its score was, and it just says TBD. So I guess it hasn't gotten enough reviews to be placed on Metacritic.
Yeah. Interesting. Probably. But I don't agree with the critics, definitely what they said about the gameplay. It's a DLC. They're not going to change things up with the fundamentals of it. Why would they do that? It makes no sense. So it's a DLC. Downloadable content is the key part of it.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves and spoil my thoughts on it, but I would say that although this DLC is not anything particularly special to write home about, to me, it was more Spider-Man, which, as we discussed on our Spider-Man review, is a fantastic game. So I was just happy to have more to play, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's good. We'll get to those discussion pieces here in a few moments then.
Awesome. So with the history out of the way, we are going to take a quick break before we move on to the story.
Hey folks, my name is Brett and I'm one of the hosts of Skeleton House, an audio-only Let's Play podcast where my two friends, Jess...
What is happening? Oh my god!
...and Steve...
Even he looks spooked.
...play through video games and I edit them, add context, and act as your eyeballs. Also, we have a cat. Come check us out at skeletonhouse.budsprout.com or look up Skeleton House on your favorite podcast app. Or your least favorite podcast app. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life.
Okay, first up today, we are going to be tackling the story. So let's dive off the top of the tallest building in New York right into that. I love the Black Cat's theme. Whenever she's on screen, it's like the you know.
she's very good at what she does. Good theme.
For sure. So you want to set the stage here, Rich?
Yes, let's set the stage here. So once we finish the main game, obviously Wilson Fisk, everybody else is gone. So there is a big gaping hole in the MAGA. I think it's MAGA. MAGIA.
Magia. Don't Magia. Say MAGA. That's something else.
I don't know. MAG? What is that? I don't know what that means.
I can't remember. It's the crime lore.
Oh, crap. Yes. Okay.
The crime gang. When you say MAGA, it's like, that's definitely something else.
it's still crime now. Crime family. So it fits.
Yeah,
it fits in a way. So they're now trying to take over the city. So it's an increase of fluctuation of crime. for Spider-Man to deal with. Well, learning about this new crime wave and everything, Spider-Man learns from Mary Jane about a USB flash drives that contain all the fortunes of the crime families from Wilson Fisk. So they're making a play for those USB drives. So Spider-Man actually sneaks into, he gets involved with it. He sneaks into, I think it's an art gallery where one of the paintings that Wilson Fisk used to have is now hanging. He gets there and all of a sudden the crime family shows up to try to retrieve it. Before he gets it, Black Cat shows up, sneaks in, steals it while Spider-Man is in combat.
So for those that don't know, there was a side quest line in the base game where Black Cat left some clues around for Spider-Man to find. I can't remember what the ultimate goal of that was, but you have to like use your binoculars to find like a hidden Black Cat symbol somewhere from the cityscape. But she's like Felicia Hardy from the original canon, I believe, went to high school with Peter, and she was like this rich preppy girl. But her father was like a famous cat burglar. And so when he died, she sort of took over that mantle and became the Black Cat. So she's like in this black leather suit, long white flowing hair. She's got this black mask on. She darts around like a cat. Think like it's basically literally like the Marvel version of Catwoman.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Wait. Yes. DC version of Catwoman.
Catwoman's DLC.
DC. You said Marvel.
DC. Yeah. What did I say?
You said Marvel. Never mind. You said Marvel. You said Marvel. I was like,
don't call me.
Sorry. So Spider-Man encounters Felicia, who smashes the painting, steals the USB, takes off. Mary Jane informs him that Hammerhead's family's in possession of the drive already. So that means that Black Cat is working with Hammerhead's family or Hammerhead's gang to start retrieving all that. So you find out there's two other drives out there that you have to work together with Mary Jane to try to capture that while keeping the trail of Black Cat to keep her from getting that to give to Hammerhead. Now, again, these are major spoilers for everybody who has not played this yet. You find out that the reason Felicia is working with Hammerhead is because Hammerhead has her child. So right. It's keeping him hostage. So she would go out and take all or to go get those things and bring it to him.
And for those that don't know, Hammerhead is a Spider-Man villain. He's like a mob boss, usually in some kind of pinstripe suit. But his head is literally shaped like a square, kind of. Isn't the canon like he has a metal plate in his head or something?
Mm-hmm. He does. Yeah, he's very strong and genetic and everything. He's modified and, you know, your typical supervillain.
Right. And real quick, before we continue, I know I just got done talking about Black Cat, but I love her. She's like one of my favorite Spider-Man characters. So I was very excited that they brought her into this DLC. And I think they did a really good job with her in this. But we'll talk about her more in a little bit.
He just loves Black Cat. So Spider-Man feels for her. The reason why he does have the feelings for her is because they used to date a long time ago. She also kind of alluded a little bit that he might be the father because he didn't know that she had a kid. And yeah.
What did you think about that? Like, did you think that it might be true or are you immediately like, I doubt it?
A little bit thought it was true, but I'm like, oh, this is going to get really good between the dynamic of Mary Jane and him.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just started dating again. I think they started to have that conversation. Now, I think the dialogue between Mary Jane and Peter was kind of funny about them talking that she has a child and that he might be the father.
I'm sure she was super excited.
She was not excited about that.
When eventually tell her about it, though, she seems pretty understanding.
Yeah, she does. But she's like, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah,
let's do this. So he decides to help in getting that. So they locate the drives. They get one. And then everything was fine with that one. And then they go to the second one. That's where Black Cat traps Spider-Man in the vault. So she can take the drive. And she's got all three of them. And she's going to just get rid of them or take the money, I think. Because she gave decoys, I believe, to Hammerhead, if I remember correctly. However, when he gets out, he actually overhears Hammerhead's goon saying they're going to kill Felicia once she gives the drives to them for the betrayal, because they know about that she's going to betray them. So he rushes across town to save her. But I like how she like looks at him and waves at him, and then the building blows up.
Right.
And so she knew that it was everything was going to be bad.
Yeah. So we'll get into that a little bit more towards the end of the DLC. But it's like as soon as she walks into her little penthouse or whatever, it blows up. But it's like, I think I remember this line. Spider-Man tells her over the comm or whatever, like, don't go in there. It's a trap. And she says something like, I'm not out of lives yet or something like mm-hmm. that. So it's like, damn it, if you just listened to him.
Yeah. He's like, you'd be fine. Because I think they even, if I remember correctly, this, the child was never in danger.
Yeah. Do we, spoiler, there is no child.
Yeah.
But do you find that out now or at the end of the DLC episode?
I think you find that, let's see, I'm trying to think here. I think it's later. I have to go back and double check that. But they find out that it's not, that Peter is not the father of that, so that's really good. But they didn't find the body of Felicia, so that's right. A plus, implying that she had survived. So he's relieved that he's not the father, relieved that she might be alive. Instantly enough, Mary Jane says that he would make a great parent one day, you know, with the right person, with the right person. Yeah. So smack in the face.
So let me ask you, did you think she was really dead here, or
no, because the way that it she looked at Spider-Man, waved at him, knew that there was a trap, led me to believe that she was well in advance, privy to the knowledge that they were going to betray her and everything else. So she's like, I got this.
Yep.
So
I will say we glossed over a couple things here, but like I'm remembering there's a couple fights with a bunch of goons where Black Cat is helping you. And there's also a part, I think, where you have to like point out which goons for Black Cat to go after, and then she flips them and takes them out.
Yes. So there's one of them in the final vault where you believe the child's at, but this is where the actual drive's at. Mm. So there's a shipyard. So that combat gameplay is actually really fun. You just point at the, like, get that guy, and all of a sudden Black Cat shows up and takes him out. I actually did a whole entire area before it made you fight people completely secret. Like, nice. I got everybody in stealth using Black Cat and everything. So that was fun.
I kind of wish there had been more of those sections, because it was really fun just to have a partner character, I guess, that you're working with there.
I enjoyed it.
And the bad thing is, like I said, I really love all the Black Cat shit. And like, she's basically out of this, the rest of this DLC until almost the end. Spoiler. But let's move on to, did you have any like overall thoughts about part one, the heist or anything?
Part one was good. It gave more of a backstory between the Black Cat, because I had totally forgot that the Black Cat was a relationship of Peter Parker's, like her, Felicia Hardy was the Black Cat. You know, that dynamic showed that he actually had other relationships besides Mary Jane.
I think even in the comics, they dated for a while. Mm-hmm.
And he tried to help her stop being the Black Cat.
Right.
So Peter trying to be that good guy.
So next up is part two, Turf Wars, which I'll go ahead and say, I think is probably the weakest of the three. But it basically opens up with an all out turf war between the Magia gang and the police, and Spider-Man like comes in to help, and his police contact Yuri Watanabe, who is basically like Spider-Man's Commissioner Gordon. She was all throughout the main story as well. They go in. I think she's like tied to a chair or something with some other guys, or like held up with some other police officers. And they kill her like fellow cops, which sends her into a rage. And then she goes all kung fu and like does some crazy acrobatic flips and shit and takes out the Magia gang that have her held up at this part.
That's common cop training, by the way, in New York.
I was surprised, because I was like, I had no idea that Yuri was this much of a badass at this, until this scene. But yeah, so she's like fucking pissed because she feels like she let her team down and like her people are dead because of her. And she's basically inconsolable. And for the rest of this DLC, she is just like on a rampage.
Yeah, she does. I mean, she's not, I don't think she goes on a rampage yet. She's more of a sulking kind of thing and poking Spider-Man to do something like, here's some information. You need to go do this kind of thing to the Maggia family.
Right. And so Spider-Man now has to deal with the he's basically Hammerhead's after like some Sable tech that has been left behind since Sable left New York or whatever, which for those that don't remember, the Sable is like this organization of security guards that have like all this super high tech cybernetic weaponry and suits and shit like that. But they're looking for this piece of Sable tech, which is called Project Olympus. So Spider-Man, you go through like a series of missions where you slowly find out what exactly Project Olympus is and what the Maggia are trying to actually accomplish. Yuri gets pissed at one point and she kind of feels like Spider-Man's not helping as much as he should be or something like that. It's been a minute since I've played this. And like I said, this is probably the most forgettable section. But she shows up and they work together to take down Hammerhead. There's like a boss fight with him here. And so Yuri shoots Hammerhead in the head, which basically sort of kills him, we think. And after they try to murder the remaining, and they get, so like they go off to try to take out the remaining mob bosses. And then there's like, it sort of ends with this scene of Hammerhead's head getting taken away. And it looks like his goons like actually put his head on like this cybernetic huge body. Think like literally Terminator.
Yeah, it's the Sable tech. It's the Project Olympus getting his body over to that. So it kind of sped that process up because of what Yuri did. Yuri was going to do something else to him. Blow him up or do something, but she shoots him or tries to, and Spider-Man jumps in and interferes, but hits Hammerhead and, you know, essentially kills him, and his goons get in the ambulance and takes over and resurrects him. So
right,
that's kind of weird. I mean, yeah, I agree. It was a kind of a weak DLC.
DLC I still had chapter. Fun with it. It was just the least interesting of the three to me. Although it was cool seeing like, a different side of Yuri, I guess. And there's more with Yuri in the side quests of part three. So I guess Yuri gets arrested for attempted murder on Hammerhead at this point. Is that right? Or am I forgetting?
I think so. Yeah, she gets arrested because she's supposed to be on leave. And she does, you know, try to kill him and does some bad things that she's not supposed to do.
Yeah.
So they take her away.
Right. Real quick, I want to welcome Dak to the stream. Hello, my friend. Hope you're doing well today on this. Here it's rainy. It's rainy Sunday morning.
Hello, Dak.
But yeah, is there anything else we need to say about part two?
No, it's just like I said, it's not a strong deal. It just kind of it's that lull between what's going on in chapter three. So with Silver Lining, we'll kind of slide into that one. It talks about Yuri is now off the force. She is now in vigilante mode. She's going after the Maggia boss family that have wronged her. I do like, though, in this chapter, kind of piecing together Yuri's backstory of why she's a cop and what's her connection and why she has such a hard on for the crime families.
Yeah,
it involves her family. I think her dad was a dirty cop and did stuff with the crime families and got caught. And she had to take that shame. So now she's going on revenge against these people and taking them out because of what they did to her family and her image. So that's a little bit of a good piece that you kind of go around the city finding crime family members or at least goons strapped up in weird places that they shouldn't be. So,
yeah, we kind of glossed over this, but I think at this point, like the Maggia crime lords or whatever are sort of like ruling over the city more or less.
Yeah. Hammerhead was taking out a lot of those other people with this Project Olympus. So he was consolidating power until Spider-Man shows up. So once you get past the with Yuri, Sable shows back up. Silver Sable. I really liked her. I thought
she's
was
a cool character, and I was glad to see her come back, because once she sort of decides to work with Spider-Man in the base game, there's like one fight where they're together, and then she's basically not in the story again.
Which yeah, she takes off.
Kind of a letdown. So you get to get a lot more of her in this DLC.
Yeah, she comes back because she hears that a lot of her tech was left behind whenever they took off.
She a bad bitch.
And that, yeah. Well, she wanted to redeem herself, I guess, because of what Spider-Man had taught her. So she found out that a lot of the crime families were using her tech and her goons were just going all wild. So she comes back to reclaim her tech to take back to her home country to help, you know, quell the civil war that's going on. But she's, yeah. What was it called? Sicaria?
Simcaria.
Simcaria?
Definitely fictional.
Yes. So she shows up in her fancy jet, which is pretty cool, to be honest. It looks like it rivals Stark Tech. But she shows up and starts trying to take some of the stuff back and sees that, you know, Spider-Man's involved. She's like, you need to let me deal with this. You know, it's my responsibility. I'm going to take this stuff back. I need it for my home country. Well,
isn't there a running gag throughout all this where like Spider-Man's trying to get her to give him a high five?
Yes.
Something like that.
He's like, yeah, no. So she's scary as well.
Yeah.
So
she does not want any of Peter's shit.
Yeah. She does crack up a couple times, I think, at the end, like during some of the raids where she goes and her and Spider-Man go and try to reclaim some of the tech out of some of the hideouts. There's a couple of the banters where she kind of like laughs.
There's a couple of fights where she's doing like hand to hand combat against the goons with you as well. And she's just sort of like beating ass over there.
Yeah. And you're just kind of standing there going, I'm just gonna let this happen.
Yeah.
So this is fine. So once you get a lot of the tech recovered and everything else, I think all of a sudden Hammerhead shows back up just in his new super body, basically. And they're getting ready to be taken out because Hammerhead has got their jet, is controlling it, taking it down, and Spider-Man and Sable can't get away. Instantly enough, comes your favorite character.
Black Cat shows up.
She shows up briefly, though.
Yeah, she saves you. She tells you, you know, she faked her death and all that, and then she leaves, and then she's out of the rest of the story. I wish that she had at least stayed in, somehow managed to stay in and like help with the final fight somehow or something. But oh well.
And in the meantime, you still have that side mission piece of it to continue Yuri's storyline and figure out more details on what she's doing and everything. And you do eventually get her to stop doing what she's doing.
Yeah, we'll cover. There's a few interesting side missions throughout this DLC that we'll talk a little bit more in depth once we get through the story here.
So Felicia shows up, like when she shows up to save you and you kind of get away, she gives Spider-Man the USB containing information on Hammerhead's weakness before disappearing again. So she does provide some kind of benefit as opposed to saving your ass from being destroyed and killed in a fiery blaze of shipwreck. So Spider-Man then takes out and goes to this area. I think it's one of her ships, Sable's ships in the harbor that's basically camouflaged.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice.
It's like the helicarrier from Avengers,
a
boat.
Yeah. So they decide to create a laser beam that's going to take out Hammerhead's head because it's sensitive to heat based on the plate that's in there. That's the only way to take him out because he's already upgraded his body where there's nothing vital. So, but the bad part is Hammerhead shows up right before they're able to do anything. So, Sable has to get in a VTOL jet, has to blast, Hammerhead with that laser they attach. However, Peter has to fight on the ground, you know, because what else is Spider going to do? Just going to have to go
it's
punch
things. It's actually a pretty cool boss fight, but it's also like starts to stretch the, I know we're talking about comic books, but it really stretches my disbelief here. Like shooting this guy in the head with your fighter jet laser.
Yes. While you have to hold him down.
Yeah.
You have to knock him out, and then you have to, like, I think, web him down to the point where he can't move, and you have to keep his head lined up. Mm-hmm. So that's a little rough. Yes. As opposed to the real world, it'd probably just blast it straight off.
Yeah, right.
So, so once you do that, the ship crashes, the jet, she crashes the jet into him.
Which is
crazy. Once it's finally like to the last piece of it, he's going to die. She smashes the jet to him. He doesn't die, though. He's been subdued.
Yeah. How did you like this boss fight, though, Rich?
It was challenging. I'll tell you that. I actually died a couple times.
Me too.
I was pissed off. I kept doing everything. I finally got into the rhythm where I took like maybe four or five different hits, and I had to keep using my self heal like crazy because he was quick. But it was nice. I mean, did you have any trouble with it?
Well, like I said, I died a couple times, and I think it might have taken me a minute to figure out how exactly you're supposed to restrain him. It, like I said, it's been a minute, so I don't remember every detail, but I remember thinking it was a cool boss fight, but at the same time, maybe this is another complaint about the DLC story in general. Hammerhead is not really that much of a compelling villain. Like, I'd heard of him before, but like when I think of the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery, Hammerhead is not in even the top 10 that come to mind. So,
yeah, he's not really a major villain.
No.
So, I mean, he's just
put him on a Terminator body to make him seem more threatening.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he's got to go back in time and kill John Connor.
There you go.
So, well, once you finish that up, Sable reclaims all of her supplies and returns to Samakira, telling Spider-Man he inspired her to be more heroic. So, again, Spider-Man being, you know, the symbol to how people do better.
I said cute.
It's a cute moment. I think she high fives him.
She does finally give him a high five at some point. It's like the weakest high five ever.
So, and Peter's just like, just do it. Just give me a high five. That's what I want. I've been doing a good job. I deserve a high five.
It reminds me of that segment in 7 Remake where Aerith keeps trying to get Cloud to give him a high five, and he's just so awkward that it takes him a while to get there.
Yeah. So the last piece of it is Mary Jane leaves for Samakira to write a story on the war and raise awareness on what's happening in that Civil War area. Peter begins training Miles Morales. So Miles is finally come to realize that he is, you know, has powers and he needs to be trained. So he acquires those Spidey powers, prepares him to be the next Spider-Man, which leads into the next Spider-Man game,
which Reach and I have already both completed and will review sometime down the road.
That's right.
It's not really super relevant to the main plot, but there is a subplot throughout these DLCs of Miles like asking Peter to train him, because the main game ended with that stinger of Miles being another Spider-Man. And I think Peter keeps telling him, like, no, you're not ready yet, or sort of distracts him with other things to do. But yeah, so that's a cool ending, I guess. But that's the end of the main story. What'd you think?
It was good. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's more Spider-Man, like you said, more action between like what's going on. I think this might have been something they had left over in the original game. So they're like, well, what are we going to do? Let's just do this. Let's finish it out. Let's add more Miles to it. So, yeah,
literally.
Yeah, literally add more Miles and Miles to it.
Yeah. I like it pretty okay. It's not the greatest story. It certainly is not as good as the story in the base game. But I did like getting more Black Cat, so that was a highlight for me. More Silver Sable was also awesome. And then seeing like this other side of Yuri as well was really interesting, because she's just a really cool character too. Like I said, Hammerhead's kind of a lame villain, so that was weird. Overall, I liked it. And like I said, it was just more of this Spider-Man game that I love. So I was just more than happy to keep playing. So I think we don't really need to go into too much detail about our overall thoughts more than we already have. We've already talked about our favorite parts and scenes and characters and all that. So we're not going to do a separate section on gameplay this time. We've already talked about it at length on the original review. But we did want to talk about some of the... It's basically the exact same. So
yes.
But we did want to talk about some of the side missions. So scrolling back up here, there are these Black Cat history side quests where, or it's like a side quest line where you're helping this cop find paintings hiding all over the city. And it's kind of like a cool side quest, but the stinger ending is that the cop that you thought you were helping was actually Black Cat's dad, who is supposed to be dead. And he's just been sending you on this wild goose chase the whole time as he steals all the paintings.
Yes.
So that was a really cool ending to that quest, I thought.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like he doesn't tell her about it. He doesn't do anything. He just lets it go. And he doesn't want to tell her that you're like, hey, your dad's alive.
Yeah, right.
I'm pissed at him.
Yeah. And then do you want to talk about the screwball missions?
The screwball missions are just basically challenges that you go and do just random stuff to earn more suit points, like for your gadgets and whatnot, such as like web bombing X amount of people, or did the gravity well was in this one too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lassoing people to the ground using the gravity well, just different challenges to do things with the combat.
The one that stands out in my mind is... you have to web a certain amount of people to billboards within a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to do that is to set up those web mine traps on the billboards and then use the flashbang device. I can't remember his name to like shoot the people up into the air and get hit by the sensor wire or whatever.
I hated Screwball though. I don't like her.
I can't remember. Is she... I'd never heard of her before. Is she a villain in the actual comics or?
I don't believe so, but she annoys the crap out of me. Like doing those challenges for her, just do that. And she's like doing it for her fans.
Yeah. So she's like a streamer.
Yeah. You.
Yeah. Who has turned into a villain. Also like me. No. Basically,
she knew it.
She is like committing crimes using her stream audience and is like exploiting Spider-Man for the views. So she was in the base
poor
game,
Spider-Man.
But they really doubled down on her in this DLC. And her fucking missions are hard, dude. That's why it's why I didn't platinum the DLC. I think. I was so ragey. That's probably the maddest I've ever been while playing this game is these fucking screwball missions. once you figure out the trick to a lot of them, it's not so bad. But yeah.
She sucked. I did not like it. I was not a fan of those screwball challenges. I don't know why. They're like, you know what? Let's just make this complicated.
Yeah.
And they did.
ROB in the chat says she is in the comics. Okay. Interesting. I wasn't sure because the concept of her character would have to be a relatively new idea, right? Since streaming and social media, social influencers became a thing. But yeah, there's also these spider bot bomb challenges. I don't really remember those that well. Do you want to? Oh, is that when you had the little drone that crawls along the ground?
Okay. Yeah, you have to use the sensor to get to the bombs that are hitting other cars. Like you have to kind of and you hear it and you just have to divert it or not divert. You have to navigate to it, dismantle it, and then go to the next one.
Yeah, I remember those. Those weren't too bad.
No, those are easy.
Yeah. And then the last little side quest line we wanted to mention here is there's this in the third part of the DLC, there's this side quest line involving Yuri after she has been released from duty or whatever. And you find all these clues that Rich was alluding to. It's like these audio logs involving Yuri's father and trying to hunt down this sham therapist or lawyer or something. I don't remember the details, but you eventually find their bodies wrapped up in this crazy, almost spider web of police caution tape. And these quests involve following lines of caution tape everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this side quest ends pretty badly, where like Yuri leaves a message for you saying that she's decided to take, you know, handling crime into her own hands, and she's going to murder bitches over it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it ends. And she doesn't actually get like a redemption or anything. It's just like, Yuri's bad now. And so I fully expect her to show up again in the eventual Spider-Man full sequel. And I guess
I was wrong. I thought she was done. I thought she was you caught her, but I guess not.
Yeah, I looked into this. Apparently in the comics, she does become like a supervillain called the Wraith. So that's going to be super interesting, I think, to find out more about, hopefully.
That's a badass name.
Yeah, for real. No other like big side quests are coming to mind. Are there any other that I'm forgetting, Rich? I didn't do any research on that.
No, I think that hits the main of them. Obviously, you have your crimes. If you didn't finish the crimes and other challenges or the Taskmaster stuff, you can do those stuff here. You still have all those abilities. So nothing too crazy.
Okay. Anything else we want to say about this DLC before we rate it?
No, let's rate this bad boy.
All right, let's get right into it then. While we were in that musical transition, there was one more thing I wanted to bring up before we rate it. So this DLC also came with some new suits. Particularly, there was the Spider UK suit, which I believe has a big Union Jack on it somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
There's the Scarlet Spider 4, which is one of the Scarlet Spider outfits, which Scarlet Spider is a really cool version of Spider-Man, so I liked that. There's a manga-verse Spider-Man, which I think has a really comic-y look to it. There's the original Iron Spider suit from the movies. And then there's like Spider Armor Mark One.
Those are nice.
And then
I didn't use very many suits, to be honest.
You stuck with the same one.
I did.
And the third DLC introduced the End of the Spider-Verse suit, which I was kind of disappointed by because it didn't actually look very much like that suit to me. So
I think in the Miles one, it does.
Yeah. There's a cyborg Spider-Man suit, and then there's like the Spider-Man armor suit. But yeah, I just wanted to bring up those suits. I didn't want to. I figured we'd be remiss to not at least bring them up. But so moving on to the ratings here, I put a little screenshot here, Rich, of what we rated those different categories of the game, the base game, just for comparison's sake, so we don't like go too far from what we thought before.
Yeah.
So our categories today are story, combat, non-combat, visuals, audio, overall feel, and then our bonus category, a final boss. So we'll start out with story, and we'll let you kick us off, Rich.
All right. So I'm going to give this one a 7. The storyline wasn't as impactful as the original storyline for the base game. It just kind of gave us more of screen time of Spider-Man, Sable, Black Cat, all them. So I'm just going to give it a 7. It still was good. It was engaging, but it wasn't like that intense for me.
Gotcha. I think I'm around the same place you are. It's either a 7 or an 8. It looks like you gave story a 9 on the base game and I gave the story an 8. This game or this DLC's story is definitely doesn't really stand up to the base games, which had a pretty good story. So I am going to go ahead and dock it 1 point and put it at a 7 as well. I agree with everything you said. It was really cool seeing Black Cat and getting more Silver Sable and developing Yuri's character further. at the end of the day, the plot wasn't that compelling, and Hammerhead's kind of a lame villain. So,
yes.
All right, combat.
Combat. I know I gave it a 10 in the original review. I'm going to give it a 9 because it's still the same stuff. It added a few little features that I didn't think it needed, such as the screwball missions and stuff like that with the combat of doing those things. It's still good. Still, I'll give it a 9.
Okay. I gave the base game a 9. I'm going to stick with that. It's not a 10. And if anything, the screwball missions, despite how much I hate them, showed me how intricate the combat system really can be. If you know, easy to get used to, hard to master type deal. So I'll just stick with the 9. Non-combat. You're muted.
This is like always the story stuff, right? Non-combat.
Just like exploring and like some of the side quests and swinging around and like the stealth shit, all that.
I gave it a 9 because I did like doing the combat or that non-combat stealth mission stuff during like a few of the storyline pieces of it. Zipping through, using Black Cat, stealth missions, all good. 9. I know I gave it an 8, so I bumped it up just a little bit.
Okay. I gave it a 10 on the base game, and I'm going to stick with that. Again, like I said over and over during that review, the best thing about this game is swinging around and just getting from point A to point B. It's so fun, and it never really gets old. And I don't really have any complaints about it at all. So it's a 10 from me. Next up is visuals.
10. Big old fat 10. It still looks amazing. Still looks good. You know, playing it on the PlayStation 5, upscaled it just a tiny bit, still looked really good.
Now, just as a reminder, you played the PS4 version on the PS5, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. One day I want to go back and play the remastered version, despite the babyface Peter.
I haven't done that yet. I'm just...
I also gave the base game a 10, and I'm going to stick there as well. It's the same game. It still looks beautiful. No complaints. Just an absolute olfactory delight. So
yes,
that's the first time I've ever used pretty. That word, I think, in an actual conversation. Probably myself.
Look, it's your word of the day.
Yeah. Audio.
9. The sound. I gave it its 10 in the base game. 9. They rehashed a lot of the same stuff from the original game, but you know, it's still good. I still enjoyed it.
Okay. I gave it a 7, the base game. And I think that's, I'm going to stick with that because there's nothing really wrong with the audio design itself. And the voice acting is pretty good. It's more the music. I just feel like it's very forgettable. And I did listen through to the soundtrack for the DLC. And there's only a couple songs I was able to pick out of there for being like, oh, I kind of like that. The ones that you guys are hearing during this review. I thought about docking it down to a 6, but I don't think it really deserves that. So.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah. Overall feel.
8. It was a good continuation of the story of what happened after the effects of Mr. Negative's combat or conflict and Dr. Octavius. Like all that was still good. But it wasn't the same sense of urgency. It wasn't the same feel as you got from the base game. This was just the filler between this game and Miles Morales' game.
Okay. For me, I gave the base game a 9. I don't think that this game is that, or this DLC is that high. It's fun. It's more Spider-Man. I liked that part. I liked getting some more of these cool characters. But at the end of the day, I think it is kind of forgettable. And it doesn't really do anything to improve on the original experience that much. And it just felt like almost kind of mediocre after playing this amazing, you know, original story. I still did like it. I had fun with it, but it's a kind of a middle of the road. I'm going to give it a 7 for me. And then our bonus category, which as a reminder, does not count towards the final score, is the final boss, which in this case would be the Terminator Hammerhead on the boat. So
7, only because it was challenging at the end. It kind of continuation from the part 1 to part 2 to part 3 of who this guy was. There was no growth to him in general, like what he was doing. He just wanted to get rich and take over the city and be the crime boss. That was it. But 7.
Right. Okay. I'll go a little higher. I'll give it an 8. because even though Hammerhead is not a super compelling villain, like you were saying, or really compelling at all, the fight itself was pretty badass. The only thing I can really dock it is like stretching my sense of disbelief, like I mentioned earlier. It was challenging. You got the fucking jets shooting laser beams, and you have to, there's several rounds, and it ends with Silver Sable crashing her fucking jet into him. It's pretty awesome. I think it's a pretty great boss fight. So I'll give it an 8. So we have our totals calculated. Before we move on, I just want to say hi to Penguin Cheek coming into the chat here. Rich, you want to read your scores?
Yes. So I, on story, gave it a 7, combat a 9, non-combat a 9, visuals a 10, audio a 9, overall feel an 8, and then my final boss bonus category gave it a 7, which gave me a 52 out of 60. And totals of that is 87%. And I gave it a 93% on the main game.
I was about to say, or point that out. So for me, I gave story a 7, combat a 9, non-combat a 10, visuals a 10, audio a 7, overall feel a 7, bonus final boss category an 8, made my subtotal a 50 out of 60, slightly lower than Rich's, and my final total was an 83%. And for comparison, I gave the original game an 88%. So a solid step down for both of us, but still, I would say that's a solid score as well. Which,
not too bad,
brings the official RPG After Your score for Marvel Spider-Man The Never Sleeps DLC, an 85%. I was, as that drum roll was going, I was like, damn, I'm going to have to say a lot real quick. But yeah, so again, the final score for the base game was a 91, one of our highest scored reviewed games on this show. And 85% is very respectable. Honestly, a little higher than I thought it was going to end up at.
Yeah.
How do you feel about
that? I mean, I like it. I mean, it's not, we didn't give it higher than the actual storyline, so that was good. I was a little concerned about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it falls where it needs to be. This is an added bonus feature to the main game, so it's not going to be like, oh my God, over the top, crazy good. It's just going to fill it in until the next game comes out.
Okay. So looking at our master list here, that puts this game around the 9th place rating, which is pretty high.
Yeah.
It is tied with East Book 1 and 2, and it is right above Alundra and right below Phantasy Star 2. So, how do you feel about that, Rich?
Well, Phantasy Star 2 needs to go way the fuck at the bottom.
Were you on that review or not? I can't.
No, I didn't. I finished. I quit that son of a bitch. I'm okay. Still pissed off at that. I'm never doing it. How dare you all bring that up to me? I just raged a moment. I had just emotional roller coaster.
Corey and I were reviewing Ori and the Blind Forest yesterday and looking at these ratings, and they were like, how the fuck is Phantasy Star 2 so far up there?
Yeah, that's Bill's fault.
Bill's not allowed to review anymore.
That is Bill, and then I think we had a guest on there, Rob, maybe. Yeah. One of our earlier Robs, Rob 1, right. I should say.
I get the Rob confused.
Yes. Rob, they're wrong. Yeah, they're absolutely wrong on that review. That game sucks ass. Sorry.
And for those that were wondering on the RPG scale that determines how much of an RPG this game is, it scored a 115, which does make this game technically an RPG.
Nice.
At least for the purposes of this show. That's why this isn't a bonus episode. But yeah, any final thoughts on Spider-Man DLC?
No, I want some DLC for Miles Morales, and I want the next Spider-Man game to come out soon.
I wonder if we'll get any DLC for Miles Morales. I'm going to bet no.
No, we're probably not.
Yeah. Which is fine, because I just want that sequel faster.
Oh, God, they left it hanging so bad.
Yeah. Dude, I hope we get some. Oh, I meant to mention this on the movie section. The movie, like the month before this game came out, that was number one in the US, was Venom. So I thought that was ironic. But also, like, dude, I hope we get some Venom in the sequel.
We should. They set it up really nicely for that.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead and finish up this review, clean things up. This episode ain't over yet, though. We still have to convene our RPG club for World of Final Fantasy. You ready for that, Ricard?
So I have to say, the music for Spider-Man, any game that has orchestrative music like that automatically gets bumped up like 5 or 6 points in my book. It's just so epic.
I know. I remember when we reviewed the original that our opinion on that differed pretty dramatically. So,
Yep. Sorry.
All right. Let's convene this club.
Do this.
All right, everyone. Quiet down. All rise. We're here today to bring to order the next session of the RPG Club. All in favor? All opposed? And looks like the ayes have it. Then let the RPG Club commence!
Alright, so the goal was to complete Chapter 11 by today in World of Final Fantasy. How did that go for you, Rich?
Wah, wah.
Didn't make it.
I didn't make it. It's a busy couple weeks.
Shame. Shame.
Shame. Hey, at least it's one. It's one so far.
Yeah, one strike. How many sections left are there, actually? I think there's like two. At least.
Yeah, there's still left. Yeah.
Yeah. So
still got time to fail the others.
You do have time to fail. So
I'm not. I do like it. I like the game. I just didn't have time to play it.
Sadly, Jay has quit this club. We won't go into detail, but he's fine. But he's having a lot of tumultuous life experiences right now. He's in the process of moving, more or less. That's the short version of it. Patrons can listen to the party planning where I explain it all to Rich, what's happening with him. So,
because I don't pay attention half the time, apparently.
Right. Anyway, World of Final Fantasy. So I guess since you only did Chapter 9, we will give you that section, Rich.
Yes.
But just a brief overview here. We only have 3 chapters in this section. Chapter 9, The Low Seas. Chapter 10, Too Warm a Welcome. Chapter 11, Crimson and Azure. So, there's not a whole lot of new gameplay mechanics introduced this time. I think we've mostly gotten through learning how the game works at this point and all its different systems and shit. So, Rich, I'll just let you talk about Chapter 9.
Yeah. So, Chapter 9, Low Seas. Quistis finally shows up. She is in charge with Ferris on the boat. They decide to reassemble the assault boats from Final Fantasy VIII. Resembles the assault boat. So it's nice, little bit of a nod back to that. I do like they sprinkled some of that stuff through the game.
Did you have that thought that they looked like those boats?
Not until you that I just read that. Okay. I'm like, oh my God, it
does. They look exactly the same, but I think that was supposed to be the idea because it's like they do kind of look like them and it's Quistis that gives it to you. And everybody remembers that scene in FF8 where Quistis has the Gatling gun on top of one of those boats.
So. Instant boner.
Real quick, okay. I will say, though, that's the end of Quistis's role. So I was excited to see Quistis, and then she's immediately gone. I'm hoping she comes back later, but like that's one of my main complaints that I've started to realize as we go through this game. All these nostalgic cameo appearances, they're like barely there. They're there, and then they're gone quickly. And it's almost like you don't have time to get attached to them, or it really could have been any other character, because like, other than her appearance in the boat, nothing about her, what happens with Quistis in the section, has anything to do with Quistis or Final Fantasy VIII. So,
no.
She's just an avatar.
No.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt you so dramatically.
Maybe she'll come back. I don't know. Maybe she will. No. We'll see. No, I get it. It's, you know, it's that nostalgia feature that we want to see all those characters kind of weave in through, but I guess not.
Yeah.
So you go through there. They go over the waterfall in an anime cutscene. So Jay would have liked that.
I do like that.
Land safely in the water.
Whenever an anime cutscene pops up. Actually, this is the first one since the intro, isn't it? Or am I wrong?
Yes. No, it's the first one.
So I was like, oh, there's going to be more of these.
Yeah, a little fancy. They wake up and save a mini Manatois from the sea snakes, gaining the favor of the Adamantois. He ferries them across the low seas where you meet Riku. I don't really like Riku.
She's in her tent. Naturally. Outfit. She literally just pops out of the water like she's a fucking fish.
Oh, Riku. Tentu ruined the image of Yuna and Riku for me. Anyways.
Fair.
Then you'd have to dodge mega shack rolls until you reach safety. It always makes me think of it's like a it's a squirrel that looks like Shaq. The just based on the name.
I think it's supposed to be shark.
If you read that, it's like
a shark.
That is.
They're big sharks.
Shark wool. Yeah, shark wools.
Did you have any problems with that? With the dodging the sharks?
No.
Okay, because I heard a couple people
complaining about it.
And I was like, really? I didn't hit one. But
such peasants.
If you do get into a fight with them, I think you you just die because you can't win. So
yeah. So you reach safety, then you get to the Rainbow Shore. Riku leaves naturally, and next Final Fantasy character shows up and then leaves dramatically. The enemies in there is the sea snakes. Yep. It wasn't too bad. This chapter is okay.
It's really short. Like if you, as long as you don't get into the shark battles, it's over in like 20 minutes, if that. But again, Riku like makes her little appearance and then leaves without having any effect on the story or any kind of memorable interaction at all. So
yeah, just like the F10.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Sorry.
Actually,
Riku, I'm doing that for you, your benefit.
Riku is my least favorite main character from 10, other than maybe Kamari, but I think I might like Kamari even more than her. Not that I dislike her, but anyway. So the rest of this I'm going to have to handle, since that's how far Rich got. So again, shame. Chapter 10.
Shame.
Too warm a welcome. This is basically a big dungeon. It's the Dragon Scars. It's like this mountainous, craggy region. You go through, you have to like jump down some swampy ledges and like sort of navigate around. The main thing here is there's like these red dragons that are occasionally in your way that are kind of challenging. They're weak to like water and ice, and they can really like drain your AP fast. I don't know. This is like just an overarching thought, but like I'm finding the game. Maybe I'm bad at it, but I'm finding it kind of difficult. Or maybe that's just because I expected it to be easy, but I think it's challenging. Even with the random encounters a lot of times. But anyway, the secret area of this place that you have to go to, you have to fight Cerberus, which is your first mega X or your first XL size Mirage. And so just so you know, Rich, this is a super large type of Mirage that apparently works kind of like a summon where it replaces your entire party if you use it.
Ooh.
I got really frustrated because I was trying to catch the damn thing with the, you know, the Pokeball, but I fulfilled all the conditions. I had it like triple stacked as far as the Prismtunity created. I could not catch it. And then I think somebody down
there. You have to catch it?
You don't have to, but I was trying to.
Oh, okay.
Somebody down here, I think maybe it was Bill or somebody, said that they tried like 30 times before it finally got caught. So that's a problem.
Damn.
At the end of this dungeon, the boss is like this mega red dragon that sort of sneaks up on Lon. And of course, he's like, what the honking honk?
Yeah.
By the way, Frost gave me some what the honk drops, so I'm going to add that to the soundboard at some point.
Nice.
You defeat the mega red dragon. Another one shows up. And at this point, you get an appearance from Tifa, who is in her like Nibelheim cowgirl tour guide outfit. She just does like a big, you know, 1-2 punch combo, Final Heaven on the red dragon and kicks its ass.
Nice.
So she invites you to her hometown nearby, which is Nibelheim, which I was like, oh, cool. Another like classic FF location. And apparently Nibelheim has not yet joined the Federation, and she wants you to meet somebody there once she figures out like, oh, you're the giants from the hills. And so you go down the mountain, and that's pretty much the chapter. This is actually pretty cool, Rich, because once you get to the bottom of the mountain, you can sort of see Nibelheim in the distance, but it actually looks more like Midgar.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's like kind of like Nibelheim and Midgar had a baby, sort of.
Nice.
But yeah. So chapter 11, Crimson and Azure. You get to Nibelheim. It's like I said, it's kind of like this more technological Midgarish version. You learn that it's not yet joined the Federation. It's apparently ran by the Shinra Company. So I don't know how important to the plot the Shinra Company is going to be, or if that's just like an Easter egg throwaway mention or what, but we'll see. So Tifa introduces you to Rydia and her Mist Dragon, and that's the Rydia from Final Fantasy IV, who is one of my favorite characters from 4. I think second only to Tella, who I loved from that game. But basically, she tells you about these two prophecies. There's the Azure prophecy and then the Crimson prophecy. And they have subtle differences between them. One of them's older than the other one. I can't remember the details because I wasn't really following what was happening when she went through the prophecies. But basically, they decide, she tells you that she knows which Fire Valley nearby has the key that Lawn and Rain are looking for. And it's Valley 7, because apparently all the Fire Valleys around here are numbered. So she decides to come along with you. You leave Nibelheim, and you go to this volcano Fire Valley area. And you just have to, like, this area can get kind of confusing because it could be kind of difficult to remember which way you came from or which way you haven't been. So, yeah, just be careful with that. Eventually, you get to this part where you save Rydia from a monster, and you learn that she's afraid of fire, which is a pretty neat callback to 4, because fans of 4 will remember that Rydia was afraid of fire for the first part of the game, mostly because her entire village was burned down. But yeah, so you kind of have a pep talk with her, and she decides she's going to get rid of the firewall that's preventing you from progressing, and that she'll leave after that. You do that, you get like some kind of heartfelt scene. However, it didn't really do much for me, because I'm like, again, these Final Fantasy characters they're not making them very compelling. And I was like, really? You're kind of lame in this version, Rydia. unfortunate. But you get past that. The boss is a King Bomb, which you just have to make sure you have full health before you, once it gets low on health. So remember that, Rich, because it does a lot of damage when it explodes.
Oh, nice.
And then I can't remember exactly what comes about after that. They get the key, but then Leviathan appears and like washes them away. And that's the end of the chapter. I played the beginning of chapter 12 just to get to a save point, but we'll save that for next time. I would ask about your overall thoughts about this section, Rich, but you've played not even a third of it, really. So
they're awesome.
Yeah. Sorry to spoil that shit, but I mean, who cares, really?
It'll be all right.
There's no major spoilers here. Just, I guess, mainly the FF characters you encounter. My thoughts on this section. I had fun. I already addressed my main complaint with the Final Fantasy characters. And other than that, I'm just really hoping that things heat up here. Like, I'm ready to find out more about the core story and lore and shit. But yeah. The only new gameplay mechanic I can remember being introduced, and I think it's one that's unique to the Maxima edition, is there's this avatar change thing you unlock, which apparently in battle allows you to replace your character's appearance with one of the Final Fantasy characters. So that's kind of a cool thing, I guess. But it costs Arma Gems, so I haven't done it. Anyway, moving on to the listener feedback here. Why don't you take that first one, Rich?
Yes, yeah, so Frost. First, the negative. I like the idea of stacking mirages on those pedestals to unlock bridges and the like. But there was one part, there was two in a row that required the same mirages, and it felt like padding. Other than that, Chapter 11 was absolute joy. Also, I got a Moogle pirate. So it was pretty good.
I guess that's a
JS. Yeah, it's positive. JS, Chapter 10 was the high point of this stretch.
That's I guess that's all he had to say.
That's it. That's everything he's got.
Which I wonder why. It must have been like the Tifa thing that he liked, or maybe just the dungeon itself. I agree with Frost about the pedestal thing. It seems like more of a padding thing than anything else. All right, moving on to Brandon's feedback. He says, I love Rydia, so I was happy to see her. I agree. I love Tifa, but felt a bit meh with her appearance. Yeah, Tifa's like, again, these Final Fantasy characters are one and done. I was surprised Nibelheim was chosen over Midgar, only to find that it was basically Midgar anyway? Question mark. Yeah, it's like some kind of weird melding of the two. I am enjoying the gameplay, though. I feel behind on my stack setup even still. Join the club. Overall, enjoying the experience. Yeah, we are too. I'm liking it, more or less.
Me too. R.O.B. So Chapter 9 shows me that these chapters are too short, combine some of the setup and different structure to tell the story. Tifa using Final Heaven to save your ass is great. Loved her introduction. Very happy to see Rydia too, and her fear of fire at first. As much as I love seeing places from Final Fantasy VII, quotation, the best Final Fantasy. It showed me a flaw I overlooked until now. These towns aren't very immersive. Let me go inside a building. Let me shop in these towns. Chocolat is cool. And
Chocolate is cool and all, but I don't always want to run back to her.
Thank you. The fire cavern was cool, but I had a glitch and the cut scene was cut short. I think I'm confused on which prophecy we want to happen now.
I can't even tell you the difference between them. So, or if it even matters. That's a good point about the towns. They are like pretty shallow. Not a whole lot to do in them. I guess that brings up a good point as well with Chocolate / Chocolina. In the Final Fantasy 13 game, she's just everywhere all the time. So why can't she just... Why is she relegated to this one spot in this game? Who knows?
Eh.
Our very own Bill left a lot of comments here. In Chapter 10... Let me try my accent here. In Chapter 10, in Just Meet Tifa, still in love with the game. Has tins always, but makes better use of it with the dungeons. Locations are wonderfully done, and the comedy and the voice acting, international I think, is landing with me a lot. What the honking honk? What do you mean clowns? Plural. Jelly sandwich. On paper they seem shit, but in context of the moment they are cracking me up. Wish they had made more use of Quistis and Ferris. I agree with that. The way you get to ride the sea was super cool, even if it was spoiled by Riku. Go that way. The only way you can go. And then he did an angry emoji. Playing with my stacks way more now, and I'm pretty beefy already with zero grind. Healing items are key, however. Got to keep Chocolina in business. Bring on Chapter 11. Should have this section done in time. I'm finding it a joy to behold and play. I thought I'd despise this game, and if I'm honest, I currently love it. It's just an easy, lighthearted romp through a torrent of welcome nostalgia bombs.
You sounded just like him. It is awesome.
I've heard his voice enough, so.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It seems like he's really loving it. I agree with most of the things he said, although I think he may be hotter on it than most, including myself. But yeah, that's this RPG Club. Any other comments on Chapter 9, Rich?
No, I don't. I'm excited to get through it. That's this week's challenge, is to get that finished and the other chapters.
So again, the next goalpost for the RPG Club is to complete Chapter 14 by Sunday, April 11th. But that's going to be it for this session of the World of Final Fantasy RPG Club. So we're going to go ahead and adjourn the club and move on to the outro. Yep, so we had our RPG Club, we had our DLC story, City That Never Sleeps review. So, Rich, can you tell the fine folks what we're doing next week?
It's the total muted button again. next week, we are doing this awesome thing called the Rise of the Tomb Raider review featuring Lauren. I will not be there. So, excited for that next review.
Yep. Lauren's been on the main show before, I think, for the Nier Automata review. So this should be a lot of fun. It's just going to be me, Corey, and Lauren. But Rise of the Tomb Raider is the second game. So look forward to that in the trilogy, I mean. Again, RPG Club. I already said it, you know, multiple times, but complete Chapter 14 by April 11th. One more quick announcement. The Materia Lockdown is raring on. It has officially kicked off. If you have not started your lockdown, I'd encourage you to go ahead and do so. You can follow the account at FF7MLD, and you can find out more information for that at MateriaLockdown.com. Launching into our plugs here, a great way to help the show would be to go on iTunes or whatever your podcasting app is and rate and review us. It really helps the show grow. And we would really appreciate any kind of 5-star review you guys get through our way. Another way to help the show, you can look at our Patreon. You can get early episode access, ad-free episodes, access to our aftercast. We really need to do one of those. Lots of bonus reviews. There's tons of reviews on there now. You can participate in the nominations and voting for the RPG Club. And there's a lot more benefits out there, too. You can find all that at patreon.com/RPG After Years. And real quick, I do have a miscellaneous announcement. We have a couple new patrons. And those people are, let me look up their names here to make sure I get it right. Andrew Collins at the $1 level and Rob Colbert at the $5 level. Thank you guys so much. We really, really appreciate
any
kind of financial support you can throw us. We use that to improve the show.
That's right. So if you are joining us now live, seeing our beautiful faces and Scott wearing the decked out Spider-Man crew and me looking like I rolled out of bed, you can find us on Twitch every Sunday morning, usually about 9 a.m. Eastern time at twitch.tv/RPG After Years.
Yep. And I feel like I had something else to say about the Twitch streams. Oh, Bill will be streaming his
plug yourself
down. Yeah. On that channel. And you can follow me on Twitch at @the_Scott_Splat, where I will be streaming my lockdown amongst various other games. I stream a few times a week, so 3 or 4 times. If you're interested, you want some sweet show swag, get some shirts, get some posters, get some mugs, coasters, almost anything you can think of other than hats and thongs. You can find that stuff over at redbubble.com/people/RPG After Years/explore.
If you want to email us any questions, concerns, comments, show feedback, or, you know, subjects that we can talk about on the show, you can definitely email us at rpgafteryears@gmail.com.
Another way you can get in touch with us is the Discord. We are always having heated discussions in there. Well, maybe not heated, but like popping discussions. I don't know how to describe it. It's fun. I know a lot of people in there are really playing through Bravely Default 2 right now, which is not, I'm not interested in it at all, but I know a lot of people are. So you can find the link to that on our pinned tweet on Twitter or in the show notes. Speaking of Twitter, you can find the show at RPG Years, and you can find me at the Scott Spot.
You can find me at HailBlue1569.
And that's going to be it for episode 58. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the Spider-Man review. And once again, we will be getting to Miles Morales eventually. But you can join us next week as Lauren, Corey, and I knock out that Tomb Raider review in episode 59. Until then, I'm Scott.
And until sometime when I'm back, I'm Rich.
See you guys next time, true believers.
Has been slain, the world has been saved, our heroes are basking in the after years. Rest in the tavern for all to hear their tale of victory and conquer fears, revel in the peace that reigns through the land. All will know it was by our hero's hands. Here in the after years. Here in the RPG after years. Here in the RPG after years.